kind of new. Hopefully, it will go over. I've got a few other people that are, have stated interest in having such seminar, and so they won't have to put up with the same mistakes that I do in this one. Thomas Campbell was born February 1st, 1763, near Newry, Ireland. He and his brothers were taught Latin, Greek, writing, arithmetic, English grammar, and reading at a very early age. When they were still young, they were already teaching younger children, kind of like the one-room schoolhouse concept that we had here. Thomas was a studious and thoughtful boy who had a religious nature. He did not like the Church of England and found the Seceder Presbyterians to better suit his desires. He attended all of their meetings and began to learn from them. He decided to devote his life to preaching. His father, who was an Anglican, was not very happy with him going toward the Seceder movement. A few years later, he decided to attend the University of Glasgow from 1783 to 1786. The 18th century has been called the Golden Age of Scottish thought. Campbell's years were at the height of the brilliant intellectual awakening. And if you've never read about what was going on there, you need to, because a lot of the philosophical thinking that was going on at this time was actually even the foundation of the American Republic. The teachers of the University of Glasgow were fairly successful in relating the principles of inductive reasoning with the Christian faith. Most other universities there either went with one or the other. They had a hard time bringing those two together. While studying religion, he also attended the medical school lectures. At that time, it was considered appropriate for a minister to also know how to take care of the health problems, because many times there weren't doctors in the community, so that the preacher would have both roles. In 1787, he entered the theological school of the anti-burgher branch of the Seceder Church. I won't get into what all that means. To be admitted, one was tested in philosophy, personal religious beliefs, and Latin and Greek. He completed his studies in 1791 and returned home. Thomas married Jane Corneigle in 1787. Their first child, Alexander, was born on September 12, 1788. Thomas began preaching for poor congregations and supplemented his income by tutoring children. He required his children to memorize scripture every day and recite them at evening worship. Questions were asked regarding those scriptures. Each child was required to give an accounting of each public worship meeting. How many of us, when we get home after Sunday morning, sit our children down and say, "Now, what did the preacher talk about?" When Thomas was not home, his wife Jane continued the practice. Thomas was known as a wonderful community worker with members of the congregation. He made calls to every home at least twice each year. Now, for us, that might say, well, big deal. They didn't have cars. He studied with all the children. He kept track of the religious knowledge of every household. So you can imagine what that entailed. He kept detailed records. He held himself to an incredibly high level. His diary notations show that he was constantly reflecting on his life and how he could improve it. He was known as a man of much prayer. In 1797, James Haldane and others published a non-sectarian organization for tract distribution and lay preaching. Now, the Haldanes are very famous. James Robert Haldane, predating the Campbells, helped lay a lot of the framework for what the Campbells believed. I happen to have a biography of Robert by James in my library, an original copy. It was named the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel at Home. Campbell warmly sympathized with the organization and became a member. Campbell also knew of the Sandian and Glass independent movements. Remember, in my first lecture, I talked about Robert Sandeman. Sandeman, originally from this area where Thomas is living, then came. And Glass predated Sandeman and Sandaman was his son-in-law. The Sandamonians, or Sandamans, believed in weekly Lord's Supper, a kiss of charity, love feasts, mutual exhortation, elder leadership, and weekly contribution for the poor. The Haldanes felt that the Sandamans were a little bit too strict and controversial in their spirit. So while having some fellowship, they didn't necessarily get along real closely. Campbell also was observant of the sectarian spirit of the denominations in Ireland. Divisions were magnified with bitterness and narrowness. He saw the division and bitter spirit as a hindrance in evangelization. The double labor of teaching and preaching, along with the stress of dealing with strident divisions, seems to have led to his decision to move to America. His health was beginning to trouble him, and doctors advised a trip by sea. It is known that discussion had already been ongoing between Thomas and Alexander about such a move. A lot of their friends had already moved to America, and he was being encouraged by others to do the same thing. On April 8, 1807, he set sail on the ship Brutus. It should also be mentioned that with all of his duties, with the medicine, with keeping track of all of his congregation, with teaching school, his health was beginning to fail. He had worked himself just all the way down to where he was about to have a nervous breakdown and a physical breakdown. So with all of that combined, he decided to come to America. Upon arrival in Philadelphia, May 13, 1807, he found the Presbyterian Associate Synod in session. He went to the meeting and was given an appointment in southwestern Pennsylvania. He wrote a letter home, which in part said this: "What a debtor am I to the grace of God, for these kindnesses conferred upon me are also for your sakes, that through his mercy we may yet praise him together in the congregation of his people. My dear children, let me address you together. See that you follow the directions I gave you at my parting, whether by word or writing. Be a comfort to your mother. Love, cherish, and pity one another. Love the Lord your God. Love his Son, Jesus Christ, and pray to the Lord constantly and ardently for me, your poor father, who longs after you all, and who cannot rest." "And who cannot rest, if the Lord will, till he has prepared a place of residence for you all, where I trust we shall spend the rest of our days together in his service." Now, what's interesting, about a year and a half later, Alexander and his mother and the other children set sail for America. And you can imagine how Thomas is, you know, in great expectation. They have a shipwreck before they even get out of England. And Alexander, his mother, lose all their possessions, everything. And they have to spend another year in Scotland preparing to come to America. So Thomas, you know, you can imagine he's waiting and the ship never comes in. You imagine the anxiety he had over that before a letter arrives saying, you know, our lives are safe, but we lost everything. Thomas made contact with several individuals who he had known in Ireland. One lady who visited him reminded him that she had walked 6 miles in Ireland, to attend a service where Campbell was a clergyman. This lady and her husband were among the first 7 that Campbell later baptized by immersion on a profession of faith. Campbell had left Ireland, again, partly for the division of sectarianism, partly for his health. He would live only 5 months in America. He had preached for 9 years in Ireland and basically got along with everybody. But he was in America for only 5 months before trouble started, and he was held liable for teaching wrong. They didn't accuse him of heresy. They just said, you're guilty of libel. Thomas Campbell, quote, from Reason of Protest and Appeal in 1808, to the Associate Synod of Philadelphia. This is part of his defense. "Before you come to a final issue in the present business, let me entreat you to pause a moment and seriously to consider how great the injustice, how highly aggravated the injury will appear to thrust out from communion a Christian brother, a fellow minister, for saying and doing none other things than those which our divine Lord and his holy apostles have taught and enjoined to be spoken and done by his ministering servants, and to be received and served by all his people. It is therefore because I have no confidence either in my own infallibility or in that of others that I absolutely refuse, as inadmissible and schismatic, the introduction of human opinions and human inventions into the faith and worship of the church. Is it therefore because I plead the cause of the scriptural and apostolic worship of the church in opposition to the various errors and schisms which have so awfully corrupted and divided it, that the brethren of the union should feel it difficult to admit me as their fellow laborer in that blessed work? Nor do I presume to dictate to them or to others how they should proceed for the glorious purpose of promoting the unity and purity of the church, but only beg leave, for my own part, to walk upon that sure and peaceable ground, that I may have nothing to do with human controversy about the right or wrong side of any opinion whatsoever, by simply acquiescing in what is written as quite sufficient for every purpose of faith and duty, and thereby to influence as many as possible to depart from human controversy, to betake themselves to the scriptures, and in so doing, to the study and practice of faith, holiness, and love. For what error or immorality ought I to be rejected, except it be that I refuse to acknowledge as obligatory upon myself or to impose upon others anything as of divine obligation for which I cannot produce a thus saith the Lord? As to human authority in matters of religion, I absolutely reject it, as that grievous yoke of anti-Christian bondage which neither we nor our fathers were able to bear. In the first half of 1812, Alexander Campbell studied infant baptism. The subject came up in the previous years due to the push for having biblical authority for all things. The birth of Alexander's first child brings the topic to the forefront of his mind. After studying, Alexander tells his father that he and his wife have decided to be baptized. His sister, Dorothea, had been studying on her own, and she had come to the decision that she needed to be baptized. Thomas tells Alexander, "You must do what your conscience tells you," but gave him no other answer. Several days later, June 13, 1812, Alexander and his wife and sister arrive at Buffalo Creek to be baptized. And what's interesting is they had to walk past his father's house on the way. The sister came out of the house and joined them. Thomas met him at the door, greeted him, and let them walk on by. Nothing else was said. They're at the creek. Everything's being prepared. Thomas and his wife show up, stating that they also have been thinking about it in the last few days, and they need to be baptized by immersion. Thomas and Alexander together preach for 7 hours, detailing scripture and the thought processes leading up to the moment. Anybody ever sat in a place where somebody wanted to be baptized, they came forward, you know, they take the great confession, and then they preach for 7 hours? Yeah. Within several weeks, over 20 more people were immersed for remission of sins. Thus, the Brush Run congregation became a group of Christians worshiping according to New Testament teachings. From 1812 to 1819, Campbell moved his family several times. He was not taking remuneration for his preaching and opened schools to give him an income. You know, he'd gone through this in Ireland. You thought he would have kind of thought about that, but anyway. Several of the schools were successful, but he would move if the preaching was not growing a church. He was happy in Kentucky. In fact, he was very happy in Kentucky until the summer of 1819. That summer, he preached to a group of blacks with a great reception from them. He planned on following up, but was abruptly told that he had broken Kentucky law. It was against the law in Kentucky to preach the gospel to blacks without 2 white men present as witnesses. I don't understand that. He vowed he would not rear his younger children in such an environment. Friends and family implored him to remain in Kentucky, but he insisted on moving back close to Alexander. Alexander had opened a successful school, Buffalo Seminary, and desired his father to join him in the teaching, so it worked out that way. Robert Richardson, friend of both Thomas and Alexander, summarized the two men like this. The father, full of affectionate sympathy and oversensitive in regard to the feelings of others, could not bear to inflict the slightest pain and would rather withhold than to confer a benefit which could be imparted only by wounding the recipient. The son, with more master of his emotional nature, could calmly contemplate the entire case and for the accomplishment of higher good could resolutely inflict a temporary suffering. The former was cautious, forbearing, apologetic. The latter, decided, prompt, and critical. Thomas attended the first debate of his son, the Campbell-Walker debate, and that was on baptism in 1820. Thomas had been against debating, but quickly realized the usefulness of them, especially with the publication of issues after they had been debated. In 1823, the Christian Baptist was begun by Alexander. Thomas was involved in editing and contributing articles. In the second issue, he contributed one on baptism. After 1823, Thomas spent the majority of his time with the ministry at Brush Run. However, his time with the Christian Baptist allowed Alexander more time to travel and preach. Thus, the work of Alexander was increased by his father. Now, I don't know that I would have a problem if my son becomes, you know, much more well-known than me. I don't think I'd have a problem in, you know, acquiescing and helping him in every way. But it had to have been a little bit difficult for Thomas because he was the kind of like the forerunner, almost like John the Baptist and Christ. I don't want to say that they're parallel in any way, but, you know, John the Baptist, he was the primary man. People were listening to him. But when Christ came on the scene, got out of the way and let Jesus take over. Same with Thomas and Alexander. In the fall of 1827, Thomas spent 2 months visiting and preaching in the Ohio Western Reserve. This was an area the government had granted to veterans of the American Revolution. He took his youngest son, Archibald, who was 23 years old, with him on the trip, and Archibald preached his first sermon on that trip. He, however, later became a physician. In 1828, Thomas again spent time traveling in the Western Reserve. He became friends with Walter Scott, who had been converting many in the Reserve. Thomas came to realize that Scott was putting into practice much better what he had theorized. And, you know, Scott being so well known, I find this really interesting. In a letter, April 9th, 1828, Thomas says this, "I perceived that theory and practice in religion, as well as in other things, are matters of distinct consideration. We have spoken and published many things correctly concerning the ancient gospel, its simplicity and perfect adaptation to the present state of mankind. But I must confess that in respect of the direct exhibition and application of it, I am at present, for the first time, upon the ground where the thing has appeared to be practically exhibited to the proper purpose." Wow. In 1830, Mormonism appeared in northern Ohio. Sidney Rigdon, a preacher of the Restoration, was converted. Thomas went to Mentor, where Rigdon lived near the Mormon headquarters, and he attempted to bring Rigdon back out of the Mormons and prevent others from being taken in. He knew Rigdon from previous years. Thomas challenged him to a debate, the only known debate challenged by Thomas, and of course Rigdon refused. And so Thomas returned home in the spring of 1831. In late 1833 and early 34, he toured North Carolina. He had great disappointment with the resistance he met from denominations along with the lack of spiritual interest. He was 70 years old and did most of his preaching while sitting in a chair, yet he traveled on horseback. In early 1835, his wife died with him at her bedside. During the last 8 years of their marriage, he had spent nearly three-fourths of it away from home. He stated some regret over that, But at the same time, he believed that she always considered herself a part of his ministry by taking care of things at home. In a letter to a daughter, he stated that he could now devote all his time and energy on sounding abroad the word of life. In 1840, at the age of 77, he was elected chairman of the board of a proposed new school at Bethany. Alexander was voted president. Thomas was the only member of that board who had a higher education. That's too bad. Alexander wouldn't be allowed to probably teach in our schools today. He just wasn't smart enough. From 1843 until his death, he almost exclusively stayed at Bethany. At the age of 80, he still preached two-hour sermons. Interestingly, he was able to again read without eyeglasses for several years. He had gone blind, I mean just almost completely blind, 3 years before. And all of a sudden, one day, he wakes up and he can see without his glasses. It's weird. That only lasted for two more years, though, and then he went blind again. In 1848, he went totally blind and was hard of hearing. He passed time with many visitors who came to Bethany. He was asked and consented to preach his last sermon on June 1st, 1851, at the age of 88. A horse-drawn sled was used to get him to the church building because he could not climb up into a buggy or a carriage. Alexander was gone on a trip and did not hear his father preach his last sermon. W.K. Pendleton, Alexander's son-in-law, took down the sermon verbatim. Thomas chose as his text Matthew 22, 37 through 40. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and you know the rest. In 1853, James Challen traveled to Bethany to interview the venerable Father Campbell and published most of that visit. And it's about the last thing we know about Thomas. And Thomas died January 4th, 1854. I hope that just gives you a tiny little insight into Thomas. A man who was willing to leave family for a time, come to a new country, and work again for just the simple gospel. If we would just have people today, men and women of the same courage and faith. As far as the room back there, if you have